Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys. Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again, year after year. Oh, no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rant of Troy Radio, episode 414, coming to you on Tuesday, September 7th. This is our Fallout episode, looking back at USC's 30-7 win over the San Jose State Spartans at the Coliseum. We're going to open up the mailbag, look back at over, under, and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at RantofTroy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/RantofTroy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play, wherever you can find a podcast, we are there. Our email address is RantofTroy@fansided.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1USC.
Second What's Burn Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo, journalist with my co-host, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, we are back. This is the first Fallout episode of the year. We're a day late because there was a holiday yesterday. Yesterday was Labor Day. Normally, during the season, our plan is to record and drop episodes on Mondays, Wednesdays, and then Saturdays because games are on Saturdays, and that's where the CarCast episodes are going to go. But look for the Fallout episodes on Monday. Look for the preview episodes on Wednesday. We record mid-afternoon and then drop after then. So we're a day late this week, but that's just how the calendar crumbles.
Hopefully we're not a dollar short. A day late and a dollar short.
I get it. It's okay. I'll give you credit.
That's how the calendar crumbles. What the heck does a calendar have to crumble for? Like, if we're going to get nitpicky about things.
What's wrong with the calendar crumbling?
What's wrong with saying, I hope we're not a dollar short?
Nothing. I'll give you credit. I just wasn't expecting it.
Okay.
Here you go. Hold on. Collectively, let's take a round of applause for Alicia's great reference.
Thank you. It was
good. Masterful. Objectively, it was good.
Thank you.
I wasn't prepared. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You just weren't prepared for me being good. I get it.
No, that's not it. Definitely not. It's all about expectations. And looking back at this game, it's all about expectations.
Yeah.
And you guys, the Rotbots, dialed into the Rant of Troy rant line, as you always do, with the phone number 213-373-1872. That's where you can call in before, during, and after games to rant, rave, and the like. Here's what people had to say after USC's 30-7 win over the San Jose State Spartans.
Hey, Raina Troy Radio. Happy Groundhog's Day. Looks like USC Phil saw his shadow, and so we'll get 6 or 12 more weeks of Clay Helton and 12 more weeks of the same old thing. Bye, Don. Bye.
Hey, Raina Troy. This is L.A. Fred calling.
It's Cameron from Frisco, Texas.
The annoying guy from the Buckeye Country. Hey, it's Josh.
Trinise from the West Side. I'm in a great mood today. You know why I'm in a great mood today? Because USC won yesterday, baby. 1-0. Let's go. I didn't actually watch the game because I had to be at a bridal shower. So I don't really have much to say beyond that. Did USC look good? No freaking clue. I was serving mimosas. But you know what I do know? I know that they won. And in the words of the great Al Davis, just win, baby. That's all that matters.
Rave line. We talking rave line? Rave line. Rave line. That's what we're talking about? We're talking about rave line? We're all, not a game. Not a game. Not a rat line. We're talking rave line? Nah. No, not done. We are not talking rave line. This is a rant line. This game is the epitome of Clay Helton's tenure here at USC.
Another year and another, not surprisingly, lackluster performance out of the gate from our Trojans.
Did we expect anything else under Helton?
The only thing that seemingly changed is in these opening games under the last 6 to 7 years under Helton are the names on the roster and the number of times I have to get up at night to take a piss.
This offense is going to be a long season. I'm calling it like 9-3, 8-4, maybe worse. It's going to be terrible.
It's just so frustrating watching this offense with all the weapons that they have put up 13 points and a half against a Mountain West opponent. I mean, come on. Come on.
4 red zone trips, came away with 3 field goals and 1 garbage time touchdown with 2 minutes to go in the game. It's 13 damn points going into the fourth quarter.
The more I'm watching Slovis play, the more I'm falling out of love with this guy.
Helton, Harrell, and the offensive staff, they continue to prove that they cannot make any sort of in-game adjustments whatsoever.
After that third quarter performance, it's been the third quarter like we have seen before countless times. Nothing done, inconsistent, no first downs, they do nothing. It's all on the offense. Graham Harrell can't call a game. They're terrible, except for Drake London.
Drake London? He balled out. Yeah, he almost got killed at the end of the game. We're keeping him in the game because we had to keep our starters in the fourth quarter because this game wasn't put away. Yeah, all of this is what USC football is about.
If not for Drake London and that highlight catch by Taj Washington for the TD, did any other wide receivers any play in this game?
Taj Washington is a stud. He can make every one of these San Jose State defenders miss. Obviously, we know what Drake London can do. I want to see KD Nixon in the open field.
Anybody going forward, especially Kyle Whittingham, they're going to shut that number one guy down. I don't even have to say his name because he's the one who got the ball over and over.
So frustrating.
We can't put away this team that couldn't do anything on offense. We couldn't put away this team. Somebody's going to try to tell me this defense. Oh, at least the defense showed up. No, no. Yeah, if it wasn't for Greg Johnson's pick six at the end of the game, this game would have been a lot closer than it should have been, and we would not be talking about rave line. So let's not get it twisted, USC fans. Let's not get it twisted, Dropbox.
Hopefully, they build on whatever foolery they put together that had people so upset on the Twitter. But I'm not going to be one of those people this year. You know why? Because Washington lost to freaking Montana yesterday, y'all. Things could be a lot worse.
I don't want this to be all negative. After all, USC did win, and I'll always take an ugly win over a pretty loss any day of the week. So for a positive, we only had 4 penalties, which is a huge improvement from last few years. And how about some love for 2 freshmen, Caleb Bullock, who started in place of COVID Isaiah Polamalu, and led the team in tackle. My excitement is going to be tempered, though, since we still have so many things to work on and clean up. So I'm only going to go with 1 big-ass beer tonight, and I might not even finish all of it. And let's get the trees next week and fight on, everybody.
We'll keep fighting on. We'll keep doing the damn thing.
Fight out.
Fight out.
Oh, as always, exceptional work from the Robots calling in.
It's a good start.
I particularly enjoyed Dave in Orange County. Good old Dave with the... Not a rave line. Whichever way. I love it. I love that reference. But
yeah.
I think the Robots sort of mirror our takeaways from this game, which is just that, like, here we go again.
Yeah. The good thing about, you know, watching this team, and this is, I think, underrated about this team, is the consistency. We talk about how this team is inconsistent. No, it's very consistent,
yes.
Right? And watching the team is consistent. And I think, as you know, we've talked about before that as a podcaster, it might make it difficult to talk about the same things over and over again. But can we look at the positives? We know what to say every time.
No, that's not a positive. That's why we're all pissed off, Michael, because it's not a positive to have to say the same thing over and over again for 5 years.
I mean, it can be.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm a little bored of it.
I mean, well, yes, but I'm just saying, like,
you gotta mix up the routine every once in a while.
100%. But, like, it's sometimes it's comforting to know, like, I got nothing new to say. Wait a minute, I can just say what I said last week.
That's not comforting at all.
The week before.
That's
the
not,
week before that.
That's not even slightly comforting to me.
Yeah, so that's how things are. We're going to talk about a little bit of the news and get into more USC and San Jose State coming up just in a second. So let's get into the news. Clay Helton's Sunday night's conference call. I went down on Sunday night, as it usually does, the day after the game. Mostly the thing to take away from here is the injury updates. And it all really does look good. IPM and Gary Bryant Jr., two guys who missed the game due to COVID protocols, are expected back for Stanford. Gary Bryant has been dealing with a hamstring injury throughout fall camp, but then was turning the corner on that before he got sidelined with the COVID protocols. He cleared the COVID protocols on Friday, but it was too late to put him into the game. So expect him to be back this upcoming week against the Cardinal. The same thing with IPM, who hasn't cleared but is on pace to clear.
Yeah, the funny thing for Gary Bryant Jr. is, like, when you hear he's dealing with a hamstring injury, like, you obviously would have wanted to see him play in this game, but at the same time, hamstrings are naggy little injuries, and yeah, some enforced time off just to make sure for sure that the hamstring is good, that's not the worst thing in the world.
No, it's not. And then you can talk about IPM too. Like, obviously you'd want your, you know, captain of the defense, right? He's someone who you would expect to be one of the best players on this team and one of your focal points, especially on the defensive side of the ball. At the same time, when you look at how the game played out with Kalen Bullock there, it's not the end of the world that Kalen Bullock was able to get in all that experience as a freshman in his first ever appearance for the Trojans, his first ever start. Let's see, weather the storm here.
Some silver linings for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. With Kalen Bullock is now a comfort for USC going forward. They don't necessarily need him, but now you know, like, you can throw him in and not have to worry at all because he's already stepped up to the plate.
Yeah, 100%. Other news, injuries-wise. Nick Figueroa, who had an AC sprain, is day-to-day. Drake Jackson had a thigh contusion. He's day-to-day. And Chris Steele had a thin laceration. He is day-to-day. Expect a little bit more updates on those guys really today, as we record this. USC is going to practice later on Tuesday afternoon, and that's when you would hear updates on that. So check back for the Stanford preview, and we can look back at those. But all things considered, Clay Helton said on Saturday after the game that he thought SC kind of got through on injuries pretty decently, and it looks to be the case going forward. Nothing major or serious that would hamper the Stanford game. Let's look at the rankings. SC getting the win. Their biggest week one win since 2015. A 23-point win over the defending Mountain West champions. That boosts them in the AP poll to 14th, up a spot. They don't move in the coaches, and they stay at 14th. So a consensus 14th in the main polls. We don't have the SP Plus numbers yet, but FPI, the Trojans sit at 21st. Drop two spots. But this is where I say I do not care about FPI.
Well, I mean, all advanced stats are going to tell you different things. So the sure. FPI overall, I don't think matters a lot. I think I did find it interesting looking at the efficiencies, the FPI efficiencies. USC was 42nd overall, 86th on defense, and on offense, 86th on offense, and I'm going to have more to say about that later. 9th on defense and 67th on special teams. So I think that, weirdly, the FPI efficiencies are probably a better mirror of what, like, the eye test told me this week for USC than some of the other advanced metrics that we've gotten to see. So that, at the very least, you know, tip of the cap to them for that. But these also, these numbers are all, it's kind of pointless looking at them from a week-to-week basis because these are all meant to be, you put in complete data points and then get the full picture out. When you're putting incomplete data points, which an individual week of football is, you can only tell so much.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot to to still come together, even though we talked about how consistent USC is. Let's talk about the rest of the Pac-12 and Notre Dame, everyone on the USC schedule going forward. The Utah Utes beat Weber State 40-17 on Thursday night, as did ASU beating FCS Southern Utah 41-14. Colorado beat Northern Colorado 35-7, I believe. Those were all on Thursday night. Oregon struggled against Fresno State, eked out a 7-point win, a game in which Kayvon Thibodeau left due to injury. UCLA got a big win over LSU, 38-27. And then from there, it was a disastrous day for the Pac-12. Washington loses to FCS Montana, 13-7. Stanford loses to K-State. Daniel Matabebe in K-State, 24-7. Purdue beats up on Oregon State. Nevada beats Cal. BYU beats Arizona. And Utah State ekes out a late win over Wazoo, 26-23 on the Palouse. Sunday night was Notre Dame getting an OT win over Florida State. Nearly blew a big fourth quarter lead. Mackenzie Milton. What am I doing?
Yeah, you flip that around. Yeah.
Mackenzie Milton leaning back like a Disney script out of his disastrous, horrible leg injury that he suffered at UCF back in 2018. He comes back, leads a comeback for the Noles, but they can't get the win over the Irish before Brian Kelly, of course, executes his team.
Executes a joke he stole from John McKay.
Not so very well.
Yeah, very poorly. And that's why that's controversial. But this was a weird week because it started out very well for the Pac-12, and it actually turned out very well for the Pac-12 South. I mean, even you look at it in the midst of all those Pac-12 North losses, Arizona losing to BYU 24-16, like, that's not a terrible result for Arizona. That's a better showing than I would have guessed. This is the question I have. Is this result a good sign for USC? Because BYU does not look like the team that they were last year.
BYU was dead last in the country in returning production. They lost everybody off of that team. So I would say on paper that it's not doesn't look terrible for Arizona. I think if you're Jed Fish, you got to probably feel okay with that. But at the end of the day, like, what does that game show you? I don't know that it shows you anything.
It shows us that Arizona has a pulse, though, because it's not like everyone Arizona played last year was, like, good.
Right. I'm just saying
the fact that they fought through in that game tells you that they might be on board with Jed Fish. That doesn't make them dangerous, fair. But
and we know BYU is well coached with Satake.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying neither one of those teams are what they are in week one as they are going to be in week 12.
Yeah, that's fair.
Week 15, right? Yeah. So SC plays Arizona in the middle of the season, so we'll see how that goes. But they finish with BYU, so BYU is going to be a finished product, you would assume.
Right, but they got a long way to go.
Yeah, long way to go for the Cougars and the Wildcats.
Overall, this week, I think USC looks at it, like, coming out of this week, I already thought USC's schedule was fortunate. It looks even more fortunate coming out of this week.
100%.
Does week one mean a whole lot? No, it really doesn't. But Notre Dame doesn't look impervious on defense. They have a lot of work to do on defense.
Yep.
You know, Washington, who the heck knows how that possibly happened? I didn't watch the game. I don't know how you lose to Montana.
Okay, Montana is not a bad FCS team. But they're an FCS power.
But they're still an FCS team. At the same
time, they're still an FCS team.
And they're an FCS team, and Washington is a
contender in the conference.
And they have a really, really good offensive line and a really good defensive front. Like, again, I don't know how that happens. But the rest of it is just the way things go in the Pac-12, and I think it goes to show that there's going to be a sort of middling feel to the Pac-12 again this year. I don't think there are any elite teams.
Yeah, clearly it's all Larry Scott's fault. But I think you look at it and it's going to be interesting to see how it all comes to fruition. UCLA has the biggest notable win with the win over a ranked team. But we've talked about it before. I don't know that LSU is any good. So I don't know how much stock I put into that.
Here's what I have to say about UCLA beating LSU. I made a lot of predictions this week, partway for the Pick'em League that we're in, but partly because of my job where I'm actually making like predictions in publication. My predictions were all wrong. Like, I was bad, terrible on the prediction front, but I did predict UCLA to beat LSU, which is how telegraphed that game was.
Yeah, so, yeah. Which is why I don't understand the national narrative, but yeah. I've talked about that plenty. But last thing we got to get to before we talk about USC's win over San Jose State is the terrible loss of Sam Bam Cunningham. He's passed away at 71. He was an All-American, fullback at USC, a captain, a national title winner on the 1972 Infallible Trojans, a member of the USC Athletic Rose Bowl and College Football Hall of Fame, an incredible ambassador for the program. We know the history going back to that 1970 game against Alabama in Birmingham. Like, this is one of those guys that you are so glad to be associated with this university. And I put on Twitter, this one stings because it seriously does. Like, I don't know how you want to compare notable players of the past from passing away. Like, that feels weird, but like, this one just feels like it just hurts so much more than some other names. And again, it's not a competition.
I wasn't prepared for it. Like,
yeah, we were
sitting at the kitchen table and you're like, wait, Sam Bam died? And I'm like, Sam Bam, like Sam Bam? Or are you talking about some other Sam Bam? Like, what? And it just sort of like a punch in the gut. Like, you're just not 71 is not the age at which I expect these sort of titans of the sport to be passing.
Let's be real. He looked like he was 51.
Yeah, he looked great. And we don't know what the cause of death was at this point. Either way, it's just terrible. It's just sad. And Jeremy Fuster, one of the guys we know from USC, tweeted, if USC didn't limit their number of retirements to Heisman winners, they'd have no numbers. But few Trojans had a career as worthy of a number retirement as Sam Bam. And I think he's 100%. Absolutely right. He was, like, when I say a titan of the sport, I mean, like, a titan of, like, USC history. Like, he
yes.
is a historical figure. Athletically, he was outstanding. He made his mark. He's just one of those guys that deserves all of the honors that you can give him. I hope that on Saturday, USC does something special to acknowledge him
at
the Stanford game. I hope everyone understands, and I think everyone does. I mean, you and I are too young to have seen Sam Bam play in his pomp. But like,
we heard the stories.
We understand. We've seen this. I've read enough of the stories. I've seen enough of the clips. I've seen, you know, I know enough of the things to know that this is just like one of the big, big figures in USC history. And he's going to be very, very missed. It's just a huge bummer. It just hurts.
Yeah, it's a big loss. It's a big loss for everybody. Growing up, my dad would talk about him so much because of what he was as a football player in addition to so many other things, right? Sometimes it's easy to you look at the cultural impact of the 1970 game, right? And I think that is so much of a part of Sam Bam's story. At the same time, I think it's easy to forget like the little things. Like, Sam Bam, one of the greatest players ever from inside the 2-yard line, doing the leap. And my dad would just instill in me that, like, if you have the ball at the 1-yard line, you need to leap over like Sam Bam and do the John McKay little free willy leap with his hand over to Woody Hayes. Like,
yeah.
That, it's so iconic, and it's such a classic thing of USC and history, and it is it's not good to not have Sam here, but yeah. You'll be forever in the hearts of the Trojans and in the history, the annals of USC history for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Rest in peace and fight on forever.
Yes, indeed. And with that, we do that awkward transition thing to talking about this past week's game, USC beating San Jose State 30-7, a game that we've talked about before on paper looked fine. Like, if you would have been, if If someone would have given you, we're looking at the stat broadcast right now in the game book. If you would have gotten this on Saturday morning, I think you just take the game. Like if you don't look at the play-by-play, you just get the stats, and you get the, you see the score and all that, you immediately take this. 30-7, SC wins by 23, they cover, they hold San Jose State to not many rushing yards, they control the line of scrimmage, they like do those things, you take it, 100%. But yet, it was a game that worked out in frustrating ways, and that tends to happen with this team.
Well, it just goes to show that the problems that this team has are, I think, disturbingly deep. You know, like it's not that they don't have talent, because clearly everyone played well. Like, who didn't play well in this game from a USC perspective? Maybe you want to see more distribution to other passing targets from Keaton Slovis and from the wide receiver core in general. Maybe that's a criticism you have.
I think you could have seen more from Slovis. I thought he locked onto his receivers a little bit too much, especially Drake London. Was not his best game. He was a little bit nimble in the pocket, a little more than
we
saw last year.
I thought he held onto the ball a little bit too long.
Yes, he
took
did.
Some sacks he did not need to take.
I agree.
And so, yeah, those are things. But at the same time, like, if this is a middling performance, I think, for Slovis. I don't think this is a bad performance from him. If you're going to give it's the first game of the season, you have to ease in excuse to anybody. Like, I think Slovis probably gets that one, you know, just work your way up.
Sure.
The problem is that the red zone offense is so disappointing that it overshadows everything else. And I put this on Twitter. USC's offense is too much filler and not enough substance. 416 total yards is something that Clay Helton gets to brag about on the Sunday conference call.
Can I go with my little pet peeve here?
Yes.
We talked about this a year ago, how Clay Helton and Graham Harrell had established this idea that if they ran for like 170 rushing yards, that they could be on the level of being a playoff and championship team, because that's what LSU and Alabama did in 2019. That, well, SC threw for as many passing yards as those two teams did. Those two teams were the only teams that threw the ball better in 2019, LSU and Alabama. So if SC just ran for the same number of rushing yards, you know, that's the lone difference. And they kept citing every time they would rush for about 170 yards, like they did last year in the opener against ASU, and then in week two against Arizona, they did it back-to-back weeks, and, well, we're running for the total that we're looking for. And we talked about it then, that it seemed like a little bit of false science to look at that total when it's not what the total is, it's how you get there. And here we are in 2021, and I was there after the game talking to Keaton Slovis, and he mentioned 160 yards again.
Yeah.
Like, well, we had a good day rushing because we ran for 160 yards. And I think the rushing game was good in this game. I don't want to take anything away from what USC did on the ground. At the same point, let's stop using those yardage numbers. Those yardage totals don't tell you anything. They don't. It is a false equivalency to being good. Like, it does not tell you anything. Cite the yards per carry. Cite some you know, other statistics about the running game than just total yards. Because, you know, we saw it, I think, last year, where there were games in which they got to about those totals that were buoyed by like a 30 and 40 yard run. And to their credit, they didn't have those. This was a like genuine 160 yards on the ground where there wasn't like a 50 yard run in there.
174 sack adjusted rushing yards, 5.4 yards per carry sack adjusted.
Yeah. And there weren't any long runs.
Yeah.
There were some 15, 16 yard runs, but there wasn't like a 40, 50, 60 yard run that took the bulk of those yards.
Yeah.
Which is why this game, I think you can be very proud about the rushing totals. But those rushing totals, it, like, what they don't tell the story as to how you got there. And it's the how you got there that's important, because I think you look at these totals for USC on offense. Well, they 416 yards, 256 through the air, and 160 on the ground. Like, none of those numbers are terrible in total. And you would have probably looked at these numbers and taken them before the game. But yet you look how the game played out and they don't do anything.
Well, because the problem isn't that USC can't run the ball. They can. The problem isn't that USC can't pass the ball. They can. The problem is you get inside the 25-yard line and all of a sudden you can't do jack crap.
Right. And, or it's the consistency of those yards.
Yes, of those yards.
But at the end of the day, the yards are going to be there anyway.
Or the balance. So you're just, this is empty calories. All of this is empty calories. Because if you're not getting in the end zone, I mean, how many years ago was it? Maybe 3, maybe 4 years ago was the year when Stanford's offense just, for whatever reason, like Stanford just could not score. They could not score if their life depended on it. And that, they had a pretty decent offense, but they just could, in the red zone, they just fell apart. That's what we saw from USC in this game. And that's what makes this so concerning, because and I wish there was a way, there was a way that wouldn't take forever to like look at what's the rushing average inside the red zone? What are the passing completions inside the red zone? Like, what are those numbers specific to the red zone? Because I think that you'd see some much uglier figures if you looked at it that way. Because USC got into the red zone 4 times, they got 1 touchdown out of that, and it was a garbage time touchdown at that.
Right. And the other thing is, SC's problem in the red zone is that they get behind the sticks, they get behind the schedule. And when you do that, and Slovis talked about this after the game on Saturday, that when you do that, you go into third down, and in the red zone, if you drop 8 in the red zone, it's incredibly difficult to throw the ball.
Yeah.
It's super hard. There's only so much space. There's only so many yards of grass.
And USC has no idea how to scheme guys open, as we've learned over the past couple of years.
They can do it at the 40s.
Well, because at the 40s, I don't think you're scheming them open. I think guys are just getting open because they're very athletically gifted.
But we've seen those hitches just be randomly open. And teams giving SC the hitches.
Yeah. But inside the red zone, you don't have to give USC that hitch. You have the defenders there to cover the space.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating because those are things that it's not that the execution is going wrong necessarily. I think there were a couple instances where Slovis's execution isn't working for what USC needs in the red zone. But I think Graham Harrell has to own that, too, because when you don't have very many options when you get into the red zone, then your quarterback is going to have to just stare at the one guy that he's going to try to throw the ball to, because you don't have a plan B, C, or at least functionally it doesn't look like you do. So one thing I wanted to bring up was something that I thought was very interesting relative to that, the ESPN FPI, where they have USC's offense inefficiencies ranked 86th. And you look at the Pro Football Focus offensive grades. This is from at Sports Pac-12, who pulled all of these together. USC ranked 2nd in the entire Pac-12 this week with a score of 82 in the Pro Football Focus grades. Now, Pro Football Focus grades are flawed, absolutely. But like that number, the fact that USC is 2nd best in the conference, just barely behind ASU, who was playing, you know, crap teams, Colorado playing crap teams. The fact that USC is up there while only scoring 23 offensive points tells you that this is all just filler. It's all of those, the yards that are not going to win you a tough game. Because if you can't do it inside those tight spaces in the red zone, if you can't do it at the goal line, you're not going to prevail. And that is the thing that I would like USC to feel and experience some urgency about. And I can't say that they're not, because I'm obviously not in their meeting rooms, but like, it would be really good to hear that the red zone thing was what people were talking about and not like the, we had 160 yards rushing. Like,
right.
Keaton talked about like finishing drives. And I think Vi also talked about like how they needed to finish, get the points on the board. So they know what they need to do. I just don't know. I don't know at this point that USC has an idea of how to do that, because this is not the first time
We talked about literally, we had these same combos last year.
Literally the entire Kenny Kenneth Martin of the THT pod, rest in peace pod, pointed out to us that like USC put up this graphic on Twitter saying USC won the season opener by 23 points, the largest margin of victory for USC in an opener since 2015. And it's like Kenny was like, I wonder what happened in what has happened since 2015. And it's like, yeah, like this is not the bragging thing that you think it is, USC, because you should be winning games by your season opener. You should be winning by 35 regularly. Like, I get that people struggle. I get that. But like winning by 23 because you only scored 23 offensive points is
it's the context thing,
and
right?
And 23 offensive points and only 16 of those were actual like not garbage time, like that ain't good.
Yeah, and it's what we've talked about before after week one stuff. If this was a one-time thing against a Mountain West champion, you could be like, well, that was a good team, and San Jose State probably is a really good team, and they're probably in the middle of the pack of where USC's opponents would be ranked if you ranked them all right. But you can't give the benefit of the doubt to single games when we've seen the same game over and over and over again. It's just the nature of the thing. SC's got to prove the inverse at some point. Final thought before you move on to over-under is that Saturday was the first time in 57 games SC held an opponent to single digits.
I was
shocked at that number.
That is a long time, and I'm going to pour a little bit of water on that because San Jose State had opportunities to score field goals that they missed.
Well, they got in the red zone twice.
Yeah.
They could have scored.
So
in that last drive, they got stopped at the one-yard line.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from the defense because it genuinely was a good defensive performance.
And they got a pick six.
And I think they got the pick six, and I think they've earned the right to be able to say that we're the defense that held somebody to single digits for the first time in 57 games. Like, I'm not going to take that away from them at all.
But isn't this the thing too? Like, not.
Why has it been 57 games?
Well, yes, 100%. But the other thing that I would say is they got things to break their way this time.
Yeah.
In terms of, because it could have been 13 points, and maybe it should have been 13 points that San Jose State scored, right? Or 14 point, whatever. But even throughout all those 57 games, there were other games that were similar to this, in which they could have held a team to 13 points, but they could have held them to seven if they hadn't
given up that 65-yard touchdown scramble or right. You know, the big breakdown, which is I think the big takeaway you take from this is they didn't have the big breakdown. Now,
right? Weren't they up against Arizona 30? Was it 42-0 or 41-0? A couple years ago at the Coliseum.
Yeah,
and then they ended up giving up 14 garbage points. So
yeah, so like that doesn't matter.
Even though, yes, they could have given up more points,
but
they just haven't, in 57 games, found a way to have everything break their
way. But, okay, for instance, when we talk about, like, the offense, like, if this was if this wasn't the same thing we'd seen every single week for years now, we would react differently. I think that I want to give a tip of the cap to the defense, but also do it again next week, because San Jose State, we talked about in our preview, they didn't have that one big guy who's going to burn you on that one play. Right. So, like, of course you didn't give up the one big play situation. Like, do that against a team that actually can hurt you that way, and then we'll really start to believe.
Who's going to be that test? Washington State with Borgi?
Sure.
Because I don't know that Stanford
if Rolovich decides to use Max Borgi as befits a player like Max Borgi, but I don't know.
Fair enough, but
Stanford. Okay, I know Stanford's offense doesn't exactly wow you, but Stanford has always had that big tight end that just burns you a few times.
That goes without saying. I think for me, you look at this stat in general, the six single digits in 57 games and all that stuff. It's akin to the 50 points. How?
Yeah, like
SC.
I don't care how you get to 50 points. Just get to freaking 50 points. Take nothing away.
Given SC's talent level and given their ability and all this stuff, their potential, they should hold teams to single digits a few times a year, a couple times a year.
Yeah.
I don't think that's unreasonable. it shouldn't be an expectation for every single game, but it should happen a couple times a year at least. And it's the same thing with 50 points when you have this much talent on offense. SC should be able to score 50 points a couple of times. I don't think it's crazy to ask for that a couple of times in a game, in a season. And SC hasn't scored 50 points in a million years, it feels like. So, yeah. Let's go to over-under, looking back at USC's win over San Jose State.
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I got to take an under here. I got three unders to take.
I'm going
to
do an under here.
All right, let's get into the over-under. See how we begin the season in over-under. Alicia, your first one was, you said over-under 4.25 San Jose State yards per carry. You set that line. I took the under. It was under at 3.5 yards per carry. The Rotbots at home, 81% got that right.
Yeah, good job on the defense. That's a area of concern that we've had in the past, and they stepped up.
100%. Next one, I set the line at 1.5 USC sacks. You took the over on that. It was the under, and only 11.9% of the Rotbots got that right.
I got burned on this, though, because USC, the pressure was good. The pressure was good. They just didn't get to Nick Starkle. And maybe that's a credit to Starkle for just getting the ball out, but, that's rough.
One of those moments where I think that sacks didn't matter because... Yeah. I think the pressure mattered.
Starkle was clearly affected by the pressure.
Yeah, and I think a lesser quarterback than Starkle maybe would have led to sacks.
Yes.
And wouldn't have been able to get the ball out as quick as he did. Next one, you set the line for 3.5 offensive touches for Keenan Christen. I stupidly took the over. 59.5 of the Rotbots took the over, and it was under because he had zero.
If USC says they want to get someone involved in the game, just don't expect them to do it. So that's that.
Yeah. Not involved. Other people not involved. Trayvon Sidney. I set the line at 0.5 catches for the former Trojan wide receiver. You took the under. Plenty of Rotbots took the under. 57.1% of the Rotbots took the under. It was under. He had zero.
Did he even participate?
I did not look at the participation sheet.
Okay, yeah, because I didn't notice him at all, so yeah.
Yeah. Next one, you set the line for tight end catches at 2.5. I took the over. 81% of the Rotbots took the over, and rightfully so, because it was over five catches for the USC tight ends. That breaks down to two to Eric Krummenhoek, two to Jude Wolf, and one for Malcolm Epps.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. I think that USC could be using those four passes that they send to Wolf and Krummenhoek and send them to other dynamic athletes.
Isn't this ironic? Because in the Sunday night conference call, Clay Helton was asked, okay, only two wide receivers really got targets, Drake London and Taj Washington. No one else even had a catch. How do you get those other guys involved? And Clay laughed and said that, usually you guys are asking about how to get the tight ends involved and that the tight ends are never involved. Well, I got the tight ends involved. And it is funny because it's the whole blanket thing, right? Like, your blanket analogy that you've talked about before.
Yeah, where you
cover your legs or you cover your head.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's just one of those things where, I am the ultimate tight end lover. I love to see tight ends involved, but, that's because I enjoy the way that tight ends sort of mix up an offense. And my frustration with USC is, the tight end that I want to see you get involved is Michael Trigg. The quote-unquote tight end I want to see you get involved is Drake London. I want to see somebody dynamic. I want the damn tight end up the seam. If you're not going to throw the damn pass to the tight end up the seam, then stop bothering me about it.
They scored on four verts to the tight end. That's yes. Tight end up the seam, basically.
Yes, kind of. And I'm big on that.
You are?
Yeah. But that's not what they were doing in the first three quarters of that game. So,
hey, it gets me the over. I'll take it. Next one, I set the line 11.5 carries for Keyonte Ingram because USC was expected to split carries among the backs. And they did pretty evenly between Keyonte Ingram and Vi Malapai. You took the under, though. It was over because he had 15. And only 38.1% of the Robots took the over and got that right.
I think that's just because I expected like Keenan Kristen to take a few. And I expected Darwin Barlow or someone else to like get a few.
Yeah.
And I also expected USC to have some garbage time carries sent to their running backs that they did not give.
Yeah.
Like
Barlow warmed up, but it had been decided before the game that he was not going to participate.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens going forward. Clay Elton said it was important to get Barlow's
Not that I mind.
Warm-ups and all that.
Give me Malapai and Ingram trading off carries exclusively in this offense. Don't mind that at all.
It worked.
For the record.
I think it's hard to be nitpicky about the run game the way it worked out.
No, I am not mad at all. The run game pleasantly surprised me because I didn't expect them to be as committed to it as they were. So, yeah that's not my issue.
Yeah, and the tandem really worked together for sure. Samuel said 10.5 catches for Drake London. You and I both took the under. 81% of our Rotbots took the under. It was over. He had 12 catches on 16 targets. 16.
Yeah, and again, it's just I made the mistake of expecting like Katie Nixon to get a catch and to see Michael Jackson and Kyle Ford and some of those other guys to be in the game, and that's not what happened. So we live and learn.
Yeah. Live and learn and then get loves. Samuel says 1.5 tackles for Corey Foreman. You took the under. I took the under. The Robots took the over. 69% of the Robots took the over on Corey Foreman tackles. It was under. He had 0.
Again, the production doesn't necessarily indicate the performance.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
I thought he got pressure on Starkle, but
he looked fine.
Didn't register in the stat book.
Yeah.
Brandon said over under 200 rushing yards for USC. Both you and I took the under. 69% of the Robots took the under. It was under, as he had 160 if you include sacks, the stats do.
Yeah, I just think 200 rushing yards, I'll always take the under for USC.
All right, last one. David Orange County said 0.5 Drew Worthy Ben Griffith's punts. You defined a Drew Worthy Ben Griffith's punt as one inside the 10 and over 50 yards, which is a pretty lenient thing. I think
that's not lenient. That's a very good punt.
A good punt, but I think for something to be Drew Worthy, okay. I think going forward we should say inside the 5 and over 55.
That's okay.
Remember, expectations are high for Ben Griffiths.
Okay. You know what I'm saying?
Either way, he would have gotten the over. He had 2. He had 1 inside the 10 that went right to the 10, and then he had a long of 58.
Yep.
Both you and I said over. 88% of the Robots took the over and all got it right. So for the week, you went 5-5. I went 7-3, baby. Dominate.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Me, along with a bunch of others, tied for the weekly high. These are the people who had 7 wins in over-under. MC from Palmdale, PJ the Swimmer, Rip Marco. We got Rick, Adam and Clinton Pittsburgh, D-Set. Congratulations, all of you. For going 7-3 and over under.
Yeah, good job. I mean, it's not easy having a winning record in over under, trust me. I know that.
That's right. That's why I had to put in a lot of extra effort to get those picks right this week for me. Really good performance, I would say. Let's go to game predictions. Bill Connolly's numbers said SC would win 41-18. Well, SC did win by 23. He was right there.
Yeah.
The margin of victory, 100% right for Bill Connolly there, but
Bill Connolly's S&P Plus, the great flaw of the S&P Plus is that it thinks USC will score more than USC ever wants to.
Yes. Well, because the offense...
So he gets the margins right, but he doesn't... The offensive
production makes it seem like they would score more than they actually do because of the red zone issues. Vegas had SC as a 14-point favorite at the win, with the over-under at 59.5. The 59.5 over-under did not pay out. That was definitely an under. But SC covers with a 30-7 win over the Spartans. You said it'd be 30-21, so you got SC's score right on the button.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to reiterate, as I always do every season, I hate being right about USC, because when I'm pessimistic, like, I put that number at 30 because I thought, like, that's the number that's going to annoy me, and there we go. Yeah. And they didn't even, the offense didn't even score 30.
A pick six and a garbage time touchdown. Yeah. SC to 30. I said 34-31, so, 34-21, which is, again, not right either. So, that's going to wrap up Over Under. We got a big mailbag. Let's get to it.
You've got mail.
All right, Alicia, let's start with a voicemail we got from Gary in Newport.
Hey, guys. Gary from Newport. Love your show. I agree with you guys. They threw to Drake London too much, way too much. They've got to realize how Drake London plays the game. He doesn't like to go down. He likes to drag some small defender down the field, and then two, three other guys come in and take shots on London. He's going to get hurt, and then he was taking shots all game long, and then finally towards the end of the game, you know, he like once again, they were taking shots at him. He comes up limping, and Hilton and Harrell are like, oh my God, our receiver, we've got to take him out of the game. They have got to move the ball around. Where was Ford? I mean, come on, can anybody find out what happened to Ford? Why wasn't he in the game? Why are we only throwing to Drake London? It's just pathetic. I'm so sick and tired of it. Drake London, you know, on his part, he's got to learn to, like, I drag this guy as far as I can. This 255-pound linebacker's bearing down on me. I got to go down. He's got to have some sense of awareness, save himself for the season, and not play hero ball every single play. Anyways, defense played great. And grateful for the victory. Love to hear you guys' thoughts. Bye.
Thanks so much for the call, Gary. Appreciate the nice words you said about the show, too. And yeah, I had the same concerns at a certain point in that game. I was sitting there going, like, why is Drake London even in the game right now? Why are you throwing the ball? Why is Drake London in the game right now? It just... That was the time when, see what Joseph Manjack has to give you. See what Taj Washington or Katie Nixon or... Put Kyle Ford in the game. Put Michael Jackson in the game. Put John Jackson in the game. Like, give those guys a run when you're just trying to see out the game. You had a good enough margin that you didn't have to worry terribly. You need to start protecting your players. And you are right. You are absolutely right. Drake London is going to get injured this season if USC doesn't do better to protect him, because we've seen this before. Every single junior wide receiver that USC has had that's the superstar wide receiver ends up getting hurt because they're the target of the defense. It happened to Marquise Lee. It happened to Juju Smith-Schuster. Robert Woods got the crap beat out of him. Like, if anyone can deal with that, I believe in Drake London being able to be tough enough for it. But, like, do not give him an opportunity to risk his body, because he will not risk his body. He's going to put himself in that position. Protect him. Yeah, from himself.
I didn't think about it, but you're right. Yeah, every one of those receivers, their final season was like a zombie.
Yeah, because they're the focal point of the defense. Everybody on defense. Okay, it already takes five guys to take down Drake London on any given play, right. And then there's extracurriculars on every single play because they know how important he is to USC's attack.
Right.
And I'm not saying anyone's trying to hurt like somebody, but.
That's
you know what football players do in right. a scrum and in a pile there.
And it goes both ways.
And it goes both ways. It's yeah.
Football. Yeah.
Yeah. So like they need to be smarter about how they use Drake. If you need to target him 10 times, 15 times in a game, by all means, do what you got to do. But you should not be risking him in that context in the fourth quarter.
I thought that drive was interesting enough in the fourth quarter, the Crum and Hook TD drive, because if it was me, I would have either had, work out the new guys at receiver if you're going to throw the ball, or just run.
Just run.
I didn't think it was... If I was playing Madden, I would have thrown four verts.
But you're
there,
dumb when you're playing. Like, you are notoriously stupid in Madden.
What are you trying to say?
You constantly... I watch you play Madden often enough to know why are you doing that? Like, don't get over aggressive. Why are you getting so aggressive?
Don't tell the people that I suck.
You're way better than I am at Madden, if that's any consolation.
Come on. Jeez. All right. Let's go to voicemail from Michael in Iowa.
Hey, guys. This is Michael in Iowa. Could not watch the game on Saturday. I just gotten back from the hospital because I had my gallbladder yanked out the day before. And I just knew that SC was going to stink up the place just like all the gas I was passing because of once it was 13-7, I knew they were going to fold. I was vastly surprised to find out they didn't fold. Boy, Iowa looked really good out here on Saturday, I got to tell you. But one thing for both y'all, I wouldn't recommend doing the gallbladder thing. It's way, way overrated. So, well, on to Stanford, who, God, they look brutal. Take care, God bless, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Michael, as always.
Oh, Michael, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you had to deal with that.
We hope you're doing better.
We hope you're doing way better. I will not go out of my way to end up with my gallbladder having any issues. I already had my appendix out when I was a kid. Don't need any...
Where's the gallbladder rank on your favorite organs?
I do not have favorite organs. I suppose my favorite organ is my heart because it keeps me alive. Other than that, I do
like
not...
The gallbladder and the spleen, like those are like organs I always forget exist.
I don't ever think about my organs very often. So I just want them all to stay put, do their jobs, not cause me any problems. That's the... Yeah,
and we're wishing you the best, Michael. We hope everything's going well with you. But yeah, SC at one point in this game led 13-7 after San Jose State scored in the third quarter, and it looked like this was going to be a game in which they could have crumbled, but they didn't. They ended up holding firm on defense. They get the pick six. They're able to add a field goal there at the beginning of the fourth quarter.
And that was the difference, right? The difference was the defense just tightened up and just took the game out of range.
Yeah, they gave up one good drive and that was it.
Yeah, and they responded very well to it after their offense didn't give them anything on the next drive, because that's what the offense does.
Yeah, and the only other drive that they really gave up was the last one in garbage time.
Yeah, which was literal garbage time.
Yeah, yeah. And nobody would have cared. Which, again, they could have scored.
Again, and then ruin that stat.
They could have scored on the last play of the game, then you wouldn't have the 57th game thing.
Yeah.
Let's go to a Twitter question from Jonathan. Will USC be a top 10 team before the Notre Dame game?
Okay, the answer to this...
It's undoubtedly yes.
The answer to this you can find in our preseason preview episode.
Oh, wait, hold on. Is he asking a top 10 team before the Notre Dame game,
going into the Notre Dame game?
Will they be a top 10 team at some point before the Notre Dame game? Because I think there could be different answers.
I think those might be different answers.
I think either way, I think SC will be a top 10 team at some point in the season.
So here's the thing. Let's assume USC beats Stanford. They're already number 14. They would need people to lose. And this week two, is very much everyone's playing FCS teams. So the threat of teams losing ahead of USC is a little bit lower. So they need to at least get through Washington State. And I think, obviously, in my preseason predictions, I do not think that is to come. But I also think that, like, this team could easily just go through this really crap schedule and be undefeated going into Notre Dame game. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's where I was in the preseason.
If USC is 4-0, I think USC is a top 10 team. And that's mostly for the attrition in front of them.
Yeah, I think so too. Just the way the polls work.
Because remember, Oregon's going to lose. Well, I don't know. Oregon might not lose to Ohio State, but like, I think Oregon's going to lose. Playing at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
At the Horseshoe. I'm sorry, Oregon.
Yeah, we'll see.
Possibly without Kayvon Thibodeau. Well, I don't know.
Jonathan also says, will USC cover for the second game in a row? You're going to have to stay tuned. Stay tuned for our Stanford preview coming up later in the week. We got a Twitter DM from Julie Madden. Next podcast, we have an honest conversation about our offensive coordinator. He's the elephant in the room, along with this boss who we just don't need to keep talking about. Also, when we lose to UCLA and Notre Dame, things will finally change, she says.
Yes, thank you for the DM, Judy Madden.
What did I say?
You said Julie.
I didn't say Julie.
You said Julie.
I said Judy.
I heard Julie. Either way, Judy, thanks for the question. And yeah, I think he's the elephant in the room holding hands with Clay Helton. I had a thought on Sunday morning when I woke up. It was like, USC was very, very close to having Cliff Kingsbury and Dave Aranda as their offensive defensive coordinators. And what would this season look like with that? Now, I'm not trying to slight Todd Orlando because Orlando's doing a good job so far. But like, again, the more I think about it, the more I think that USC made the decision to go to the air raid based on getting Cliff Kingsbury when they weren't going to get Cliff Kingsbury going to the air raid with Cliff Kingsbury, baby Cliff Kingsbury light. I think that they were taking a risk and I respect the risk, but also Graham Harrell is a very, very young offensive coordinator who probably shouldn't be in charge of this particular Ferrari. That's just my opinion. USC, okay, Harrell and T. Martin, and before T. Martin, Clay Helton. Those are the last three offensive coordinators that USC had. Three guys who were distinctly unqualified to be driving this car. Am I wrong?
I would say that there's one guy SC's had in the last decade who would be qualified.
Steve Sarkisian.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think SC's struggling to score 30 points.
If Stark
is
here?
With the garbage time and the pick six getting them there.
Dude, watching Lane Kiffin's Ole Miss against Louisville last night on Monday night, I mean, that was an experience for me.
Did you see that play where Corral runs and then stops at the line of scrimmage and just does the little jump toss?
Yes, and then they call the ineligible man downfield, which I hate, because like those blockers are engaged with a defensive lineman. Their only mistake was being too powerful against those defensive linemen. Like, if they were worse blockers, then they wouldn't have been downfield. Like, I hate that rule so much. But yes, that was a beautiful little play. And there's all sorts of beautiful little plays in Kiffin's offense.
Yeah. It's got creativity, for sure. Let's go to a tweet from Shane Sullivan. Rewatching the game, I noticed that a majority of Keaton's passes were outside with few throws over the middle. Is this mostly due to the drop eight defense that we're facing, or more because London is now playing on the outside? I think this is the offense. I think that if London wasn't an inside guy as they had used before, I think this would have been what you would have been seeing the whole time.
I think there's something to the drop eight. It was two high safeties. They were dropping eight. They were just really sort of filling the space. And so you are sort of limited. Also, USC doesn't have anybody on the inside that you have to get the ball to. So, like, Keaton's not sitting there thinking, I have to get the ball. Where I think that he got comfortable with, I can go to Drake there in the middle if I need to. I don't know that he's going to go out of his way to target Joseph Manjack at this point. I don't know that he's going to go out of his way to target, you know, Jude Wolf or Eric Cromenhoke. So I think most of the passes the outside are because that the passes were going to Drake London.
Okay, here's an idea. Why does your lead receiver have to be outside?
That's what I said from the beginning. Like, keep Drake inside. Use that mismatch. Other players can succeed on the outside, and Drake London can be an absolute mismatch nightmare on the inside. I don't like that they moved him to the outside. Personally, and I would have rather just keep that mismatch.
This is the thing we've seen. Like, throughout, remember when Marquise Lee had the big year as a freshman?
Robert Woods, too.
And then going into the next year, Lee took away all of Woods' routes and they switched roles for them. And, like, why does it have to be that way? And I know that T. Martin always talked about that you want your guys trained at inside and outside so they can go back and forth. I get that, and I think Drake London is someone who can play anywhere, but at the same point, if you know that he thrives in the inside and putting him on the outside, if for no other reason, kind of creates this opportunity where Keaton Slovis predominantly looks outside and they don't have balance in the peripheral field of the stuff.
But they like, always talk about, like, training guys to, like, line up anywhere. Did we see Drake London line up on the inside in this game? I don't remember it.
Not that I remember off the top of my head.
Again, I've only been able to... Not being able to rewatch the game, it's really a bummer. I need to sort of figure out how I can do that. But, like, that's one thing that's... yeah, I just wish... I wish they went more out of their way to make sure that the mismatches are taken care of.
Yeah. Either way, the first read of this offense seems to be look for the hitch on the outside, and if that's not there, then scramble and hope it opens up at some point.
Yeah.
You got a tweet from Ricky D. Has the air raid run its course at USC? I don't know that it's run its course. I just don't, because the thing about the air raid, I think we've talked about this before. It's the problem isn't the air raid. I think it's the problem with the way USC is running it. Right now, they just haven't been able to hit the hallmarks of what the air raid is, which is scheming guys open, making it easier for the quarterback. I think as it was in this game, I don't think they made it easier for Keaton Slovis because San Jose State took away the receivers and he didn't have anywhere else to go with, because when the focus is all about Drake London.
Okay, so I am no, like, schematic genius. I don't pretend to be an expert on all of these things.
Neither am I.
But is USC, like, USC is running air raid routes. USC is running air raid concepts. They're not running an air raid. Because an air raid would mean they'd go 4 and 5 wide. And we don't see them going 4 and 5 wide. They waste personnel on tight ends and running backs. And I love tight ends and running backs. But, like, if you tell me you're running an air raid and then never go 4 wide, never go 5 wide, are you really running an air raid? You're running air raid concepts in a traditional offense. That's what I see from USC. So has that run its course? Has a new form of... USC literally, they took the gumbo that T. Martin was running and they switched up the ingredients to call it the air raid, but they're still essentially running gumbo. So has that run its course? Yes, I think it's run its course. As I've said from the get-go, if you're gonna focus on, we need to be able to run the ball 170 yards a game, well then... Do a pro-style offense like Lane Kiffin runs. If you're not, then go all in on 2019 when you didn't have any running backs and just throw the heck out of the ball and stop with this in-between that's not working.
Well, I think SC acts as if they're running the air raid, but what they're showing in terms of formations and how that everything works, it's a power spread. But
yeah.
the power spread is not that power spread that you get to see that Alabama and Ohio State and all those other teams run.
Yeah, it's a power spread. Again, it's a janky power spread that doesn't have a running quarterback.
It's not enough of a power spread, and it's not enough of the
air raid. So they're trying to take advantage of all these concepts, but, like, in order to take advantage of those concepts, you have to go all in on what that offense looks like, and we don't see USC doing that, and they don't have offensive minds running it to, like, recognize that, I think.
Yep. Michael Madden says, rewatching the game, I have two questions. One, do you think it's possible USC's offense simply struggles because of the lack of a strong scheme/play calling, not because of a weak offensive line unit? It's possible. I think it could be porque no los dos.
Well, yeah, porque no los dos. In this game, the offensive line was fine. They did their job, and I don't think they were a liability. So in this game, and again, like in this game, USC's the offense didn't struggle in 75% of the field. They struggled where it counted in the
I'll push back on that, because they had that period in the middle of the game where they had multiple 3 and outs in a row.
Okay, that's fair. In the second, like, quarter, it got real not quarter, fun.
Yeah, it struggled.
Yeah.
They stalled, but they also had drives where they just couldn't get anything to go as well. It's not, they would have had 500 yards if they would have stalled every time they went to the red zone. But that's not what happened in this game.
Well, but, okay, so offenses are going to stall. Offenses are going to go 3 and out. If you score your touchdowns in the red zone, you score 45 points in this game, and we don't have to be having this conversation. So I think it very much is a little bit of both. But the problem is that if USC, 1 week, it's the scheme play calling, and the next week it'll be the offensive line, and they can trade off and you can have a bad season.
Yeah. Michael, second question. Are you guys in or out on Graham Harrell and his future at USC? Here's what I will say. I don't know that I'm in or out. I think it's more so of, we talked about just do the thing, right? Like, be an air raid team or be a power spread team. Don't be halfway in the middle. And again, as we've said multiple times on this show, when was SC's offense at its best under Graham Harrell? It was November of 2019. It was when all the running backs got hurt and they had to force themselves to go all in on the air raid.
That's when Drake London emerged.
That's when Drake
alongside
London
Tyler Vaughns great. And Michael Pittman and Amon-Ra St. Brown.
And Keaton Slovis looked incredible.
Yes.
The offense dropped 40 against a Cal defense that we all thought was good.
Like, yeah.
Remember, I know people love to hate the Iowa game, and rightfully so.
The USC
Iowa
was
could not stop USC's offense
before Keaton got injured.
No, rewatch yeah. that game. Yeah. Iowa could not stop USC's offense before Keaton Slovis got hurt.
Yeah.
It's a shootout if Keaton Slovis doesn't get hurt.
Yeah. So this offense can be good. Who I'm out on is Clay Helton. And I think that is, you know, Graham Harrell's going to be a baby that's thrown out with that bathwater. But I also, as I've said, I think Graham Harrell at this stage in his career, USC should be shooting higher than someone like Graham Harrell. USC did. They went for Cliff Kingsbury and they got burned there. And I understand how that all happened. But that's where they're at.
Right. Yep. I've got a bunch of messages from Dave in Orange County. First one, hearing a lot of positive feedback about our defense. Sure, they got two interceptions and only allowed 7 points, but we had no sacks. And they were benefited from their quarterback just being inaccurate, which caused a lot of drives to stall. Explain to me why I should be more optimistic about this defense. Here's what I will say. I don't think Nick Starkle was inaccurate in general. I think he had plenty of throws that weren't perfect. But Nick Starkle is a good quarterback. And maybe this is giving Nick Starkle too much of the benefit of the doubt. But I think SC forced a fair bit of those, especially on third down a couple times. One of the reasons that I think that San Jose State struggled on third down is because SC was able to get pressure even if they weren't forcing the sack. The tough part is, like, those things don't measure up in the stat book, so it's hard to say. Like, that's all just, like, intangible stuff and eye test. But I really do think that it wasn't about just the sacks. It was about the pressure in this game.
Yeah, I would agree with your assessment. And I would also kind of agree with Dave. As I said earlier in this episode, I think the defense gets the tip of the cap. Now show me again.
They did give up yards.
They gave up yards.
I mean, it wasn't the perfect defensive outing.
Things could have gone wrong in a lot of ways, but they buckled down when they needed to buckle down. They got pressure and unsettled Starkle, and they looked okay. In a game where you accept that there might be some early season rust, the defense looked like a defense that you would look at and say, that was a good performance against a team that you should shut down the way that you shut them down. Like, I can't ask for too much more from this defense when even in a worst case scenario, they were going to give up 13 points in this game. Like,
right.
I think that that's how you really should be looking at this defense. They looked good. They didn't give up the big play. They got pressure. The secondary looked sharp. The young players stepped up. I think when we're talking about all we're talking about on offense, like, we don't need to nitpick the defense right now.
No, 100%. And looking at it, 74 of Nick Starkle's 308 yards came in the very last drive in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they gave up yards, but San Jose State had even more empty calories, I think, than SC did in that sense. So we've talked about empty calories before. Dave also says the offensive line looked improved from last year. Was this caused by schematics or are these young guys just playing better than last year's dudes? I think it's possibly a mixture of both. I think it's a little bit early to tell. Also, this is where we caveat that I know I'm not an offensive line expert, so I can't give you that answer.
I
would assume that Alicia is not either.
No, not an offensive line expert. What I can say is I didn't see the sort of physical beats that make me worried about USC's offensive line occasionally. And I think it's a credit to the tackles that they were on top of things. Were they perfect? No. But I also think that when Keaton Slovis was in danger in this game, it was his own fault. So there's that. I think they looked fine.
Drake's next question. Dave's next question. He writes Drake in this question. That's why. Dave's next question. Who is quieter on Saturday? Our linebacker core or our receivers not named Drake? I'm going to say it's... I don't know.
Hey, Tosh Washington had a hell of a catch.
Was out there. And they were just fine. It's just that they weren't registering all of the big moments that you would think of. The receivers weren't getting an opportunity outside of Taj Washington.
Yeah, I want to give a ton of credit to Taj Washington. I thought that what you saw from him is exactly why you brought him in. I think that's yes. That play that he made on that touchdown is why you brought in Taj Washington. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And he only needs to do that once a game for him to have an absolutely freaking outstanding season. So, yeah, give me the receivers, not named Drake, over the linebacker core, which we've had a discussion about. Too many Anthony Saros, not enough Raymo Ligas. Too many Kalukula Maiavas, not enough Brian Cushings.
Next question from Dave. What area is needed for more improvement for Slovis? Higher location of passes to Drake London so he can use his basketball skills near the goal line, or checking down and dumping off the ball to our running back?
Give me the check. Well, number one, to just bypass your question, number one is just going through his progressions. He's a junior quarterback. He needs to go through his progressions. He can't just fixate on Drake London. Number two, though, check down. I mean, that's part of growing through your your progressions is to just check down to the running backs. And we know that these running backs, when they have the ball in their hand, they can be dangerous. So, yeah, do the check downs more often.
Yeah.
I think the location of passes, I would be way more concerned about how long he's fixated on Drake London than where he's putting the passes for Drake London.
Yeah, and that would also allow him to look at things like, sorry, I got sidetracked by, I was looking at the stats really quick. Never mind. I misread the stats.
Huh.
Ignore me.
Shame.
I was talking about looking at Derek Deese's numbers, San Jose State's
That beautiful tight end. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so he had 3 catches for 63 yards.
See, hold on. I'm going to steal a moment from you. When we talk about we got the tight ends. They had 2 they had 4 catches for the tight ends. They totaled 36 yards. No, give me 3 catches for 63 yards. That's the tight end that I want to see.
So, I looked at this and it said I saw 21. It was 21 was next to his average. For some reason, I thought that was the long category. And I'm like, wait a minute. His long was 21. So he had exactly 3 21 yard catches.
Oh, no.
but no, he had a long of 29. 29, but yeah. Like they were all big chunk plays for sure. Yeah. Last question from Evan. Do you think we'll get as better as the season progresses? Helton's teams typically look pretty bad in the beginning of the year, but we surprisingly looked a little better than we do in week one. I don't know. I think here's the question. Last year, did they get better as the season went on? I don't know. I think SC was just what they were last year. That was a COVID season. I don't know if it's how you judge that. The year before, 2019, we talked about it before. Why did they look so good last at the end of the year? Because they changed the offensive philosophy. They had to go all in and skew air raid. And when they said, screw it, let's be an air raid team, they were really good at that. They were really good at just being one thing and having an identity. The year before that, 2018, things fell apart in the season. 2017, did they get better as the year went on?
2017, they were literally the same team from start to finish, and it was extremely frustrating, yes.
They had the one bad game at Notre Dame, but they had a couple of good games in November, but I don't think that they turned it around at the end of the year. 2016, they definitely got better as the season went on. So I guess I would say I don't know if it is a Clay Helton trait to get better as the season goes on in terms of just overall team improvement.
Okay. I guess what I would say...
It's hard because all these seasons have been for as consistent as SC has been over the last...
You know what's inconsistent? Who you're playing on a week-to-week basis. Well, like, it's not like you're playing the same 100%. Slate and so you get... You have a graph that you can just sort of see it rising. Sometimes you just play worse teams at a certain point, it makes it look like you're better, and then you run into the big teams and looks like you suck. Like 2016, like USC just played the tough games early on in that season, and then it turned out that the last 2 months of that season, everyone except for Colorado was really down.
Right.
So,
but USC was going boffo at the same time,
and USC was going off. So, like the marginal improvement from USC, Sam Darnold really coming into his own, coincided with playing a bunch of teams that were lesser than we thought they would be. So I think that's the bigger... I think we will see better performances than we saw on Saturday. That's what I will say. Yeah. Does that mean that you're better? I don't know, because opponents change.
Yeah, I think SC has a chance to be mega. If the defense plays as they did on Sunday, Saturday, where they just, they are going to be, you know, a touchdown better than they were last year, at least. And just bend, but don't break, but be reliable and get the stops when they need to. And if the offense, in a perfect world, got back to at least the production of November of 2019, even if they didn't have the inherent air-raidiness, if they got to the, back to the production of that era, that team would be mega, wouldn't they? That team would win the Pac-12.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of getting there. I don't know how you get there. The good thing for the defense is I think the defense is already at the point that you'd want them to be.
Yeah.
For the most part.
The problem is you need the defense to stay at that point. And again, show me next week.
Yeah. Show me. All right. That's going to wrap up the podcast. I guess we'll have to get to the hangar episode next time. Discussion next time.
We will. Yeah. People are on the edge of their seats waiting for the hangar discussion, Michael.
They are. Yeah. We have to hang around and get it later. All right, this is going to wrap up this episode. Thanks for listening. As always, email address, rantforrantfanside.com, phone number 213-373-1872. Thanks for calling into the rant line. Again, say that number in your phone. Call us after and before and during the Stanford game coming up on Saturday. Again, we're going to preview the Stanford game later in the week. Until then, see ya.
See ya.
See ya.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.